Brody
sports talk.
Brody sports talk. Brody sports talk. Brody sports talk.
What's up, Brody?
Hello, everyone. My name is Caleb Walgren, and you're listening to Season 5, Episode 32 of Brody Sports Talk. It's that time of the year. There's so much wonderful football happening that Derek and I, we just have visions of touchdowns dancing in our heads. And that's right. I'm saying that for myself and for my famous co-host, Derek Rusnick. Derek, how are you doing today?
I am doing pretty well. Santa did bring some coal for my teams, but it's okay because the new year is right around the corner and April is not that far away, so we can win the draft. Broncos country, let's ride.
Are you preparing for the draft? Are you like starting to open your windows up and like starting to feel the draft in your house or anything like that?
I do love a good country draft. You know, who knows what comes in this time of year, with it being a little bit colder outside, I don't have to worry about the bugs. But I do like a cold house, so I will let the draft in and, surround me.
Absolutely. Well, it is going to be a good time for all today on this podcast. I think that it will be very exciting. Of course, we have our regulars. We're getting our Brody spotlights, some of our preseason over-under results. Two new teams clinched their spots in the playoffs this week. We'll discuss that. We have our Goats of the Week. The NFL Stock Watch is back. And we have our Game of the Week and the Brody Bets. So it is going to be a fun-filled time here on the pod today. Derek, why don't you go ahead, get us jump started. I know you've brought the energy. What is your spotlight this week?
Yeah, so this is going to be my old man yelling at a cloud take, as right around the corner is my 40th birthday. And so I'm going to just go ahead and toss it under the I'm an old man now and I'm never going to understand these youngins. So the transfer portal makes recruiting irrelevant. So, you know, we throughout the year, especially because we're an Oklahoma-based podcast, so there's a lot of speculation and a lot of news being made about big name stars coming to the University of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State University, University, even Tulsa, if they get a big name out there. With the new transfer portal rules, with the new NIL, with a whole bunch of stuff that goes along with it, recruiting a five-star guy no longer matters, because one, there's going to be guys who are five stars that are going to be in the portal every single year. Two, you can just make your case for the second year. Oh, this guy went to Alabama this year. Well, he's not playing this year. What happened? Are you going to sit behind, you know, this really good quarterback? Hey, come to OU. We need a quarterback. Or hey, come to USC. Caleb Williams is going to the draft. You know, we're going to need a new guy next year. And so you don't have those guys that are going to get recruited and then sit on campus for a year or two. And it seems more and more like when it first originally started, it was okay. You know, some of these lower named guys are going to get a chance to shine, or, you know, someone who got on campus and they just didn't work out that well, they're going to go to other teams that maybe, you know, they have an opportunity. So like a guy going to Alabama originally, then going to, you know, NC State or going to a Wisconsin or something like that. And, okay, yeah, you're going to get your shot because you can beat out the guys that are there. Nowadays, we're seeing five-star guys who commit to a school. All of a sudden, they're going to another big-name school. They're going from an Alabama to a Clemson, or a Georgia to a Florida State or something like that. I don't know, like, why you would put your stock into recruiting these really big names when – they can go someplace, get a year of football under their belt, and then you can go find a guy in the portal every single year. And it seems like you could probably entice them to go into the portal nowadays. Like, there's some guys that are, hey, we'll give you a big NIL package if you go into the portal. Well, no, I'm committed to, you know, school. I'm committed to Nebraska. I played here this year. All of a sudden, they're in the portal, and you're like, where did that come from? Were they unhappy? Well, no, they got a better package elsewhere. So it didn't seem like the recruiting of a high school kid is as important this year. What it's going to seem like is what you can do when he actually shows what he can do on the field. So something has to, I mean, everyone is saying it. Something has to change. This has to be regulated somehow, or we have to go and do something with, like, a relegation system or having, you know, a Premier League and a Champions League and stuff like that, where teams can go up and down, because I don't know that you're going to have the same team, you know, 2 years in a row. Like, I mean, your stars are not going to be there. I mean, just this last week, Ollie Gordon, who is the nation's leading rusher this year in college football, plays for Oklahoma State. There were so many X's, tweets, whatever you want to call it nowadays, where he was like, oh, he's going to enter the transfer portal. He's going to go get an NIL deal here or there, or he's going to go to OU. He's going to go someplace else. And there was a big video package of him out on Christmas Day. He's coming back to Oklahoma State. That made a big uproar in the college football world, and it really shouldn't. I mean, this guy committed to Oklahoma State, had a good year at Oklahoma State, was a top 10 Heisman voter this year. So we need to change something, and we need to have some sort of transfer portal regulation. But once again, shaking my fist at a cloud.
I will say that I find it to be interesting, and it's been a little bit chaotic over the last few years. I even think of someone like Casey Thompson, who ended up at Nebraska for a little bit. Like, he started off at Texas. He went to Nebraska. After a year there, he transferred to Florida Atlantic, got hurt, and now he's, like, entering the transfer portal again to potentially play for his fourth college team. Obviously, he's had injuries. I'd never want that to be the case for anyone. I would have been fine if he was our quarterback this year. I didn't feel like, because we went from Frost to Rule, that Thompson had to leave. But, you know, if it's a new staff and you don't trust them, you also deserve some flexibility. It's just tough to keep up with all of it, because 1 minute someone's going, 1 minute they're staying. And I think because of the transfer portal getting, like, freed the way that it did at the same time as name, image, and likeness getting approved, just made everything a gigantic wild west of recruiting and a little bit too chaotic. I'm going to give one example of someone that I know all of our NFL listeners are going to be familiar with, but I thought it was a little bit strange a couple of years ago because Jordan Addison had won the Biletnikoff Award with the Pitt Panthers. Mm-hmm. Kenny Pickett had been there. Granted, his quarterback was going to be leaving. But what he did is he ended up going ahead and saying, I'm going to transfer to USC and work with Caleb Williams for a year and Lincoln Riley and those guys out there. I respect the fact that he has the freedom to make that move, but I kind of go with you, like, it wasn't that he wasn't getting playing time. It wasn't that he wasn't having success. He was doing great at Pitt. And I think that's where, at least for me, some of my confusion comes in. You could be a star. You could be almost setting school records. And, you know, if Alabama wants to reload or something, they can come after you. It feels weird, and it's why a lot of head coaches now have, like, a almost a GM or head of recruiting or whatever, because you have all these underclassmen classes that you're recruiting. You have all of the people that are in college that might hit the portal. Like, there's too many people to keep up with it all.
So I know a lot of people don't like him, but I watch quite a bit of Pat McAfee, or at least listen to the podcast, and every week he has Nick Saban on his podcast, and he was 1 or 2 weeks ago, I don't remember which, but Nick Saban is very tight-lipped when it comes to recruiting and what happens behind the scenes, but he said that he has a GM type that is handling the transport portal stuff. Like, he doesn't even have to worry about that. It's like, I'm getting reports and I'm getting, they're telling me what is going on. And, you know, of course I'm working with them to, like, we're looking for a running back, or we're looking for wide receiver depth or something like that. But, you know, that's kind of completely separate. And Nick Saban gets to do his old school coach stuff of, I'm going to go on the recruiting trail. I'm going to coach games. I'm going to run my program. But yeah, when we look at coaches' contracts, we see, you know, they have X amount of money for their staff. Like, oh, we have, you know, offensive assistants, and, you know, Alabama has been notorious for having reformed head coaches as assistants, and then they go on to get head coaching jobs again or something like that. Well, now he's got somebody who's handling the transfer portal stuff and making sure there's compliance and all that. I think that's going to be our next wave. You're going to see coaching contracts that have a hiring of a portal representative.
And if you're not, you're doing it wrong. I think that it's happening more and more, and it's just one of those things where you need – the fact that college needs a general manager just shows how much of business is in the college football right now. And while that is true, I do want to go ahead and have a little bit of a lament from this past weekend. There was two games that happened in the NFL on Saturday, one with the Steelers pulling an upset over the Cincinnati Bengals and really just throttling them at home on Saturday, winning 34-11 with, Mason Rudolph, Oklahoma State legend, going ahead and going out there and throwing several touchdown passes, especially to George Pickens. And let's face it, if Rudolph isn't showing up around Christmas, are we really as excited as we want to be? Meanwhile, Josh Allen and the Bills pulled out a late victory over the Chargers 24-22 on a game that was exclusively on streaming on Peacock. I'm not going to sit here and complain about those games, because the games in and of themselves are good games. What I'm complaining about is, while those games were happening, we missed out on being able to kind of have the love for college football at that time. Let college football and Saturday just stay together. You know, they're not going to play games on Christmas Eve when the NFL has it. NFL, you're taking up three windows on Christmas Day. You already have Thursday night football that's already taken away from college games. You know, the MAC went from Thursday to showing like Tuesday and Wednesday night football during the season so that they can make sure that they're getting their games out there independently. I mean, I don't know about you, Derek. I missed some of the games that I would have probably sat down and kept an eye on from college football this past week because of the NFL. And I feel bad because, like, Air Force versus James Madison is a type of matchup I would really enjoy. I like seeing the triple option. I don't get to see it that much. James Madison went 11-1 and then ended up getting a bowl game because not enough bowl eligible teams were available. And so they finally got to go, but their coach was already gone. And so it may not have been the same team, but if we're going to have the bowl games, we at least want to have them in windows where they're not getting blocked off by professional games. You know, I want to see these kids. I want them to have their moment. I want to have a good time. And, you know, when South Alabama goes out there and crushes a MAC school, then I want to see that. Like, they're South Alabama. Of course they're going to do that. So let Saturday stay for college, because we just need more time to enjoy those college kids playing their games. Not all of them are the big NIL deals. Not all of them are hitting the transfer portal. This may be someone's last college game. Let's not step on their toes by putting an NFL game at the same time. Derek, any remarks on that?
Your last sentence there was really important to me. So, and I apologize for not remembering his name off the top of my head, but the quarterback for the Northern Illinois Huskies, I watched him that game, and everyone knew that he was not going to the NFL. He's a good player. He's a fine quarterback and all that, but he was playing in his last college football game. He had no more eligibility left, and he was just trying to put on a show. Just, I'm going to go out here. I'm going to be with my – and every time that he got a completion, he ran in a touchdown, and it was just pure joy on his face. That something like he is still playing in college, still playing football, and for – people who are not household names, you know, there's a lot of linemen, there's a lot of safeties, you know, guys that are not going to go into the NFL. They're playing their last college football game, and they're just going out there and having fun. You know, for some other guys, they could be trying to put film out there. They're trying to, you know, once again, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, they're taking one more chance to get a 13th game of a film out there of like, yeah, hey, we're going up against somebody who is our same level or about our same level of talent. Look how good I am at dominating that guy or whatever, so that they can get on a practice squad or they can go to the XFL, USFL, whatever, you know, that league or something like that. I mean, these bowl games are important to the people who are playing in them. Now, I wish the bowl games weren't at 10 o'clock at night, Central Time, as I'm a sleepy person and had to wait for Santa Claus, in my, you know, knapsack or nightcap and, in bed. But, no, this is, college football. I mean, bowl games are very important to a lot of people, and we have to keep them sacred. I don't think NFL needs to creep in on that.
Researcher Caleb here to advise that the player whose name in question that you said bring a lot of joy is Rocky Lombardi.
There you go. Thank you.
Former Michigan State quarterback who transferred to Northern Illinois. But he's been in college for quite some time. He is not related to Vince Lombardi. However, he's been in college for a while. He was at Michigan State, started there in 2017. And like, here we are at the end of 2023. He can't. He got a medical redshirt to play this year. The fact that he went out and was the MVP of the Camellia Bowl against Arkansas State, who's coached by Butch Jones, famous coach.
Yeah, he wasn't happy that game.
So, like, it's a good time. So let these players get their opportunities and let them do what they are able to do. And so I want more of these things to happen correctly, for lack of a better term. Also, I didn't realize Thomas Hammack was an alum and the coach there at Northern Illinois. Researcher Caleb is going off the deep end. So let me go ahead and just switch it up. I'm going to get to my last spotlight in the wide world of sports, which is sticking close to the NFL this time. But I'm going to go ahead and go on a little mini rant to tell Mark not to mess this up again, at least to try and persuade him that I think that he has a decent thing going. So midway through the season, he had fired Josh McDaniels and promoted Antonio Pierce to be the head coach of the team. it definitely was a big step up. It was the furthest that he had really been in his coaching career. I knew him primarily as an NFC East linebacker during his NFL career with the then Washington Redskins and New York Football Giants. He'd been a high school head coach, worked with Herm Edwards at Arizona State for a few years, joined the Raiders as a linebackers coach, and has quickly ascended to his spot with the Raiders. All of that being said, I do know that he was able to go ahead and reach out. He's talked to some of the people that he respects in the coaching world, like Tom Coughlin, various things like that. He hasn't had any influence on this roster. This roster is a complete mess right now. And he is 4-3 as the starter of the Raiders. I feel like the team believes in him. I feel that while I don't think they will have as successful of a season as they did with Rich Bisaccia, who they should have also kept, that at some point it is not about the Grudens and the Josh McDaniels or trying to go get Bill Belichick, or I don't know what the heck Mark Davis is probably thinking he's going to want to do. When you have a candidate in-house who is showing that they can find ways to take care of business, especially on the road against the Chiefs, let him stay. Let him stay. Let him have an off-season, figure out what he's doing, get his feet under him a little bit more. But he has shown that he can lead this team. Like I said, 4-3. Some of those losses are rough. They lost to the Dolphins and to the Chiefs before. They had a very ugly loss to the Vikings where they lost 3-0. But like I said, no influence over the roster. Aiden O'Connell has been the quarterback for a lot of this. It hasn't been pretty. It hasn't been good. And yet, record high points against the Chargers, beating the Chiefs in Arrowhead. I think Antonio Pierce deserves to be the head coach of the Raiders going forward. Derek, I know you have thoughts on this. What are your thoughts about this other than whatever is going to happen, Mark Davis will probably mess it up because it's Mark Davis.
Yeah, great. I want to completely agree with you, Caleb, and wholeheartedly just dive into this. Please, Mark Davis, please, as a Christmas present to me, hire Antonio Pierce as the head coach and never fire him because Antonio Pierce can't coach football. Great. Woohoo. This is amazing. He's 4-3. Cool. He's going to be 6-11 every single year. So this year they fired a head coach in the middle of the season, and you have a guy who has been a linebackers coach and just pumping these guys up. These guys are playing for him. Great. Do you know what's going to happen next year? There's no adrenaline left in that room. He has to draw up plays. He has to make sure that that everything goes according to plan. When you do not have a hype-up game, when you're not playing an AFC West team, when you're not playing, okay, it's us versus them, and we're going to run through a wall, then it's going to be another loss. So cool, you're going to put together 6 games next year that are going to be us versus the world, and you can only run on adrenaline so much. You can only run on hype so much. Antonio Pierce is not an X's and O's guy. He's not a leader that puts together a game plan during the middle of the week. He is a guy who players are going to play for. And you know what happens with an NFL roster every year? You lose a third of your guys, on average. Those guys are going to move on to free agency, or those guys are going to and you're going to draft guys, so you have to cut guys. And the one aspect of this team that's really good is that defensive front. They had a really good game plan versus the Chiefs. And you were exactly correct. Aiden O'Connell is not the future of this franchise at quarterback. But do you think that he's going to be able to do anything with Jimmy G? No. Jimmy G has signed a contract, and he's supposed to be the future of the franchise. He's going to be wrapped up in players' contracts that the Raiders are not going to be anywhere close to anything good in the next 3 years, because trust me when I say Josh McDaniel messes up your team for 3+ years. It happened to the Broncos. There are bad contracts on there, and this is a great feel-good story of 2023, but go find yourself an actual coach. Go find yourself someone who's done it before. Keep Pierce on staff because he's got his guys playing, but this Antonio Pierce is not a coach for long term.
I think I'm going to have a small pushback just because I think that there's one thing that you kind of outlined as a critical need, and I don't know that it is. And we can disagree on this if you want. I'm fine with that. But I don't know that your head coach always needs to be the best X's and O's person as much as they are working with the staff and working with the other coaches to let them do what they need to do. Now, it could mean that you need the right staff around Pierce. I'm fine saying that. Who doesn't need a good staff around them? I mean, we've seen it with Nick Sirianni this year. We've seen it with Andy Reid this year. You lose some coordinators, all of a sudden you don't look like the same coach. Eric Bieniemy being in Washington has made the Chiefs look like a completely different team this season. They also have Matt Nagy on staff, so that probably doesn't help. But Antonio Pierce may not be the, hey, I need to call the plays, I need to be the tactician. He's not a Sean McVay. He's probably not even a Kevin O'Connell. But if it is I think of probably someone like Jim Harbaugh, John Harbaugh. Like, he had been a special teams coach. He doesn't call the plays. He doesn't call the offense or the defense. I think he trusts a lot of the people around him to do the right job. Now, do I think he has influence on fourth down calls and things like that? Absolutely. But the Ravens have shown a long standard of success without, I would say, John Harbaugh being the biggest X's and O's guy. Does that mean that doesn't, so not necessarily Pierce. I'm just saying, I think that can work. And if you're saying Pierce is not an X's and O's guy, I'm saying give him a chance as the, I'm going to organize my staff and let them do what they need to do, which could still backfire. But I think that that is an acceptable backfire at this point.
I know, I'm agreeing with you. I want Antonio Pierce as the head coach of the Raiders because he's not going to win games. Okay, so he's what, 4-3, you said?
Yeah.
So that means that he's beaten the Giants, the Jets, the Chargers, and yesterday the Chiefs. He lost to the Dolphins. He lost to the Chiefs. He lost to the Vikings. You know how many points he put up in that Vikings game? The Vikings game that wasn't great?
It was 0, I know, because zero I picked the under three. After that, and that was really abysmal.
Yeah, so, cool. Like, it's great, fine and dandy. It's a great story. I am an Antonio Pierce fan from his playing days, and I love what he's done to this defensive front. He'd done a great job, linebackers and Max Crosby and, all the, you know, they know how to rush the passer and they do a really good job. Cool. Let's hope that Mark Davis has a good hand in coordinators if you're going to make him the head coach.
I'm fine with that comment. I think that that's a good spot to be. I really also think who they get in as the GM is probably the most critical choice, because
that's true too.
The Raiders GMs have been trash for the last decade. Part of me says that was harsh, and the other part of me is like, no, that's pretty accurate. So let's at least leave that there, and let's go to some of the things we know for a fact. Some of our over-under results are in from this past offseason when we picked them before the season. We always like to call out what we got right and wrong during the season, and we did pretty well this week with the ones that came in, Derek. So the Chiefs ended up finishing under 11.5 wins because they have 9 right now. They can only get to 11. I got that one right, but it was also a bit of a nail biter. And I think it was more that I thought that the other teams in the AFC West were going to rise up and not necessarily that the Chiefs were going to look like they forgot how to play football in the back half of the season. The Browns went over 9.5 wins. We both got that wrong. I think even if you gave me a chance to adjust that take during the season, I probably still would have stuck with under 9.5. I don't want to call them the flukiest team this year, but they definitely feel – I don't think they feel like a 10-5 team. Derek, any comments you want to make about the Chiefs or the Browns there?
Yeah, so the Chiefs, I want to understand why there are not – great receivers banging down the Chiefs' door in Missouri, because like after a couple of weeks, you should have been like, oh, okay, yeah, this isn't the staff that they need. They're not doing it. You know, people go to the Lakers all the time, so then go play with LeBron. People go to, they go play with this great talent, and they take discounts, or, you know, a lot of people played with Tom Brady during his career on 1-year deals and stuff like that. The Chiefs should have done something with their wide receiver room a long time ago, and they're now playing with their just desserts. If you're telling me that Joe Flacco was going to come off his couch and do something for the Browns that, no one ever expected, I would say that you're completely wrong. And I was wrong. I'll take the Browns. I don't understand how this is happening. You know, we'll talk about the AFC North here in a little bit, but I am flabbergasted.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I think what you're also saying is maybe they should have gone and tried to get, like, I'm looking at the free agents from last year: Jacoby Myers, DeAndre Hopkins, even someone like DJ Chark or Paris Campbell. Like, go sign someone and try to bring them in to help that offense. We'll see what they do this coming year when there are more free agent wide receivers coming available. Arguably the biggest name, if he hits the market, would be Mike Evans. That would be very interesting to see. To keep going down the list on the over-under, though, we have the Saints went under 9.5. We both got that right. The Giants went under 7.5 wins, as they have 5 wins and they cannot get to 8 wins. So we both got that right. And the Titans went under 7.5 wins because the Titans are who we thought they were at the start of the year. And we both got that right as well. Derek, kind of a victory lap here for us, as these were 3 picks that we both nailed. Anyone you'd want to dive in a little bit deeper on out of that list?
Yeah, someone find Mike Vrabel and kick him in the tushy. You're telling me that you have Derrick Henry and you can't win 8 or 9 games? Mike Vrabel, I'm going to kick you in the tushy, and it's just not right. You've got a generational talent. Figure it out.
That makes sense to me. And then, of course, we were just talking about the Raiders. They went over 6.5. We both got that wrong. I'm pretty sure that one of the things Derek said was, if Josh McDaniels is their head coach, there's no way they're getting to 7 wins. And he's not their head coach anymore, so that kind of messed that up. And then I got this one wrong because I had the Commanders over 6.5. They went under because they lost, despite their comeback efforts by the great Jacoby Brissett this past week. Derek was right, though. They went under. I did not quite picture the fire sale at the trade deadline. I should have put the new ownership together and the fact that they're probably going to start embracing a rebuild and try something different. But Raiders go over, Commanders go under the 6.5. Any last comments on this section, Derek, or should we keep moving?
Yeah, so Commanders need to hire the football version of Mike Daigneault, the head coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder. When Sam Presti came to Mark and said, "Hey, you're going to be our head coach. You're going to need to develop. We're going to draft some guys. You're going to have to develop what you have on your roster, and really get in there. The Commanders need to do that. They're going to go through 5 years of really tough drafts, really tough schedules, all that kind of stuff. But each and every year they need to show development, and they need to show, and then all of a sudden, boom, they're going to get that, you know, top five pick. And that's going to be your quarterback, and, everything's going to change for them. So, Commanders, you're going to have a tough couple of years, but, they really need to develop their team better and get a coach that's based in development.
I'm just going to ask you, Derek, is there anyone that you have in mind? Like, I don't know that I'm like, oh, this guy is really good at developing the people around him. I'm just kind of curious if you have a name or two.
So I would think in that division, you're going to have to go offense. And not that he's probably going to want the job, but a guy who knows castoffs and knows about losing. I mean, that's going to be Ben Johnson for the Detroit Lions. Like, no one expects him to do anything. He's not going to want to take that job. There's much better jobs out there. I mean, he can go out to sunny LA probably, and with a really great situation for him right there. But you know, I'm going to say, you know, someone like that. You know, I think you have a guy in house already who can be your head coach, and that's Eric Bieniemy. So those are the two guys that I'm thinking of off the top of my head. I think that I'm seeing a lot of what Eric Bieniemy did at Kansas City this year, and the lack of him being there probably is doing something for the Chiefs team.
Yep. That's what we were just kind of talking about. I think it'd be interesting to see Bieniemy there. I also think that Ben Johnson is an interesting candidate to hear. I don't know that there's this is definitely the right answer, but I like where your head is at, Derek. So let's go ahead and add to this our comments on the NFL playoff locks. As you mentioned, the Lions, they're having a very successful season. They have won the NFC North for the first time that they have ever won the NFC North, because the last time they won a division, it was the NFC Central. And I think that they said during the broadcast that the last time they had won was 93 or 94. So congrats to the Lions for finally winning the division, claiming a playoff spot for the first time in a long time. And the Miami Dolphins and Mike McDaniel also clinched a playoff spot. Congratulations to them. You know that you are going to be contending in the playoffs. So that's what you can want. Derek, why don't we talk about the Lions a little bit more? Why don't you tell us about your GOAT of the week?
Yeah, so my GOAT of the week is Jared Goff, the quarterback of the Detroit Lions. So he has had a tough time of it when he was sent over from the Rams. Now, Goff did go to a Super Bowl, did lose to the Patriots. But so the Rams said, "Hey, we got to figure out our quarterback situation, and Jared Goff is not our guy." So the Rams sent Jared Goff and quite a few picks so that they could get Matthew Stafford from the Lions. Now, Matthew Stafford, really good quarterback, you know, in hindsight now, he's won a Super Bowl with the Rams, didn't win the division for the Lions when he was there. So, strangely enough, this trade did turn out better for both teams. So, in that trade, the Lions got Jared Goff, Jameson Williams, Josh Pascal, Jahmyr Gibbs. They got Sam Laporta with one of those picks. So there's at least three of those picks that have turned out to be some of the best players on the team, and Jared Goff as well. So those picks, especially with Sam Laporta, I love me some Sam Laporta. They've turned around this team in a very short amount of time. So like we said, the Lions have won the North. Look like a really good team, but not only are they winning the North, but they're an 11-win team, which is right up there with the number one seed. So they're very quietly, let's put it that way, they have staked their claim in there with the best of the best. I mean, the Niners are at 11 wins. The Eagles are at 11 wins. I mean, everyone's talking about the Eagles and the Niners being the cream of the crop in the NFC. Lions are right there with them, and so they should get their just desserts. And I think that both Dan Campbell and Jared Goff should be given their roses. And Jared Goff has come back and made himself who everyone thought he would be when he was drafted by the Rams. So a hat tip to Jared Goff, my goat of the week.
I'm going to go to the other side of the ball and go with a player that I saw making a huge impact and really was doing things all over the field in what I thought was a decisive shutdown of an elite offensive unit last night. As I want to talk about Kyle Hamilton. He is the safety for the Baltimore Ravens. He was part of the effort that was able to intercept the usually very good Brock Purdy a total of 4 times in this contest. It was not a game that Brock Purdy is going to want to remember. And Sam Darnold also threw a pick too. So it's not like it was just, they seemed like they had the number of the 49ers. Now, some of those, there were like passes deflected and caught and things like that. But Kyle Hamilton kept showing that he was doing things in the right place at the right time. He had a pick early in the first half where Purdy was trying to go to Debo. It looked like it was some sort of like a man cover 2 over. And Kyle Hamilton just stepped in front of the ball, picked it off, erased what would have been a touchdown to Debo if he had not been there. Later in the game, he was actually blitzing, got knocked down by the guard. The guard had kind of jumped on him, and he was actually going to get called for a personal foul because, like, he just didn't need to dive on the player that was already on the ground. And then, despite that, Purdy scrambling, trying to do what he can, throws up a pass, it gets tipped. Kyle Hamilton had gotten over to that ball, caught it, and set up another short field position drive for the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens, arguably, I think, look like the best team in football right now, and that might be easy to say in a week where the 49ers lost and the Cowboys lost, but the Ravens are playing good ball. They're 12-3. People don't give them quite the respect that they deserve. And I just have to give a lot of credit to Kyle Hamilton. He's coming in on this defense. They're shutting things down differently than they did before. You know, in this game, he had, like I said, the 2 picks. He had 3 pass deflections. Every now and then he does get after the quarterback as well and get sacks. He gets quarterback hits. And he was a player in the 2022 NFL draft that a lot of people were saying he's the best player in this draft. He's the most unique player in this draft. There's no one else like him. And what happened during that draft? He just slipped. He slipped way down the list and ended up getting taken at number 14 overall by the Ravens, who had safeties. People were like, you know, safety isn't that important. I don't think we need this. Well, Kyle Hamilton at 6'4", 220, with the speed he has and the lateral ability, he's really someone that you can use as a bit of an X factor. And in this Ravens defense, they've used him as safety. They're able to slide him down from safety to be a nickel corner. You can kind of bring him in almost as like a linebacker in that type of situation and have him come on a blitz. He is able to do what you want him to do, and he's able to stay on the field for a lot of downs when you need people to stay on the field and be able to play multiple areas. I don't understand how this keeps happening, Derek, because if all of this sounds familiar to you and how I'm describing Kyle Hamilton, it's in general the way I feel like people were talking about Micah Parsons in the draft class before that. Like, he also fell down into the teens during the draft, got taken by the Cowboys at 12, and it was one of those things where it was like, well, are the Cowboys going to need him as a linebacker? Well, he's a linebacker, he's a pass rusher, he does a little bit of everything in that front four. Think of Kyle Hamilton as doing a similar type thing, just in the back half of the defense. He's not going to be a pass rusher to that elite level. But him going out, getting key picks on Brock Purdy, being in the right place, showing up and being part of that strength of the Ravens defense, just felt very powerful to me. In a game that I thought was going to be a nail biter, the Ravens were able to take it and put it away early, in part because of Kyle Hamilton and his efforts. Any thoughts about my draft tangent there, Derek, or about Kyle Hamilton in general?
I am 110% behind you, Caleb. This was maybe a steal of the draft. I don't know. We'll have to go a few years down the road. But right now, it looks like this is one of the better players that comes out of that draft. And 14 is way too low for him to be. I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent and just say that the Ravens, year after year after year, just seem to be that team that is so well put together, so well they know where the pieces are, what pieces they need, where they can get them. So they brought in a former number one overall pick for just a few downs per game. That's Jadeveon Clowney. They went out there, got him, and they know, hey, he's got some old legs to him, and he's not going to be able to rush down after down after down. But hey, we're going to put him out there, 10, 12, 15 times a game, and he's going to come up with some sacks. He's going to come up with some pressures. He's going to come up with some disruption to the game. That's pretty special when you're like, hey, we're just going to put a roster spot for a guy who's going to disrupt just every once in a while. We got Kyle Hamilton out there who can play center field when the ball goes downfield. Oh, he's going to be in the right spot at the right time. He's going to cover guys. He's going to do a lot of really good things. They got Lamar Jackson. that with all the drama that happened with his contract, all the other teams could have been out there and signing him, or at least attempting to sign him, and the Ravens still have him. So I think that all you can really do in the NFL is put your team together and put them in the best spot that they can be in, and then, a few things break your way and you win a Super Bowl. And the Ravens do that year after year. I love me some Kyle Hamilton. I'm a bandwagon 49er fan the last couple of years. So it was tough to watch that game, but I will say that, Kyle Hamilton was all over that field and did a really good job.
Well, Derek, as you are saying beautiful things about the Baltimore Ravens here, why don't we go ahead and jump into the stock watch? And why don't you tell me what you're buying? Because it kind of goes hand in hand here. You're going to make these transitions super easy today.
I'm really trying. So the AFC North is a powerhouse this year. So a couple of years back, we had three teams from the same division get into the playoffs. We had the Eagles, we had the Cowboys, and we had the Giants, and that was a big, ooh, division's really good. Well, this year, we're looking very similarly with the AFC North. We just talked about the Ravens. They're a 12-win team. The Browns, we talked about a few moments ago, they're a 10-win team. And the Steelers and the Bengals, with backup quarterbacks and some of them third-string quarterbacks, They're both 8-win teams. So the worst team in the division is technically the Cincinnati Bengals at 8-7. If you look at the lowest team in each other division, you've got the Patriots at 4 wins. You've got the Titans at 5 wins. You've got the Chargers at 5 wins. Commanders at 4 wins. The Panthers at 2 wins. The Cardinals at 3 wins. And the Bears at 6. This division, I think, could probably – the lowest team could probably take out most of the second and third best on any other division. So the – since the Steelers and the Bengals are tied with the Jaguars and the Colts, who are leading their division in the AFC South, at 8-7. The South, the Buccaneers are 8-7, but they would be leading the Falcons and the Saints and the Panthers. They're tied for the best record, with a NFC South leader. And that's the worst team in the division. The Ravens, the Browns, the Steelers, and the Bengals are doing something, or have really put something together. And it hurts me to say the Browns are up there at 10 wins, because I used to never, I mean, they used to be winless, or 1 win, or 2 wins each season, and now they're at 10 wins. And not only that, but they're doing it with a backup quarterback. This division is special this year, and I think we need to recognize just how well these teams have put together their rosters.
I like it, Derek. I like it a lot. So I want to go ahead and potentially piggyback off of that a little bit, but I'm going to go a little bit further east to one of the playoff teams that I expect to at least still make the playoffs. They could have a collapse like the Colts did under Carson Wentz a few years ago, when it looked like they were all but in and then dropped the last two games. But I'm looking at the Buffalo Bills. They lost a heartbreaker of a game to the Eagles before their bye. Rested, came back strong, have knocked off the Chiefs, the Cowboys, and the Chargers. Yes, I think they're better at home than they are on the road, but they do have the Patriots and Dolphins to close out the schedule, so that's why I'm buying more of the Bills. I backed away from them earlier in the year. I was like, I'm not so sure. And I think when I backed away from them, people were still thinking AFC East champions. Right now, they're probably a little bit more of a long shot for that, but I think that there's still a chance. So at 9-6, they host New England. And then they go to Miami for the final game of the year. Hosting New England, we know that that's probably going to be a game with a bunch of snow this coming week, because it's Buffalo and it's New Year's Eve, and what else do you expect? Meanwhile, Miami this coming week has to travel to face those Baltimore Ravens, who, if the Ravens win that game, they will clinch home field advantage in week 17. The Ravens are going to want to get that badly. So I think that Miami's going to be in for a really tough fight. And then if they lose to the Ravens, Buffalo could win the division in the last game of the year, which could happen. So I'm buying the Bills. I'm putting some stock there. Even if I'm looking at this and going, well, they're probably, I mean, right now they're the 6th seed. You're going to tell me that I have to pick them against the Chiefs? I mean, they just beat them. I would probably pick the Bills to win that again, or at least I almost said at least I'd give them a coin flip chance. And that was almost not going to be pun intended, but then I realized it, so I had to call it out. But I definitely think that the Bills are a threat in an AFC where they're probably a little bit more under the radar. You know, they have not been the top team. That for a while they were in the hunt graphic, instead of showing as a playoff team in, but winning 3 in a row, Chiefs, Cowboys, Chargers, like I said, Patriots at home at Dolphins, they've got some things that they can control, and they are now at least the sixth seed, if the Browns stumble down the stretch, there's a chance that the Bills could get the five seed, and then I'm definitely giving them a pick over whoever wins the AFC South. Because I'm not going to get into that today. Well, maybe I will in a little bit. But the AFC South is quite a mess. Derek, what are you selling from your stock watch this week?
Okay, well, I love a good pasta. I love a good Olive Garden meal as much as the next person. But it's time to put away the chicken cutlets. And I am selling Tommy DeVito. He is a great story. And every once in a while, we'll get a story out of New York that will just take over the world. First, it was Linsanity. Now we have Tommy DeVito, the hometown kid playing for the Giants 10 miles away from where he grew up, still living at home, doing, you know, whatever he possibly can to continue to be on the roster, you know, because he's a second and third string guy. Those kind of things change. Well, third string guy, because he got replaced by Tyrod Taylor in around halftime in the last game. And Tyrod Taylor put up a pretty decent comeback versus the Eagles. Made some of those scary chickens, scared him out a little bit. And, you know, the Eagles should be better. They should be blowing out the Giants. But Tommy DeVito just wasn't effective. He wasn't bad. He was just ineffective and was, you know, check downs and wasn't pushing the ball down the field. And so this is probably the end of that. You know, you have to strike while the iron's hot. And so, you know, he got a little bit of money from his appearances, and he's probably still going to be a New York star for the time being, but he's not going to be the starting quarterback of the Giants. And he's not going to be the future of the franchise. You know, they have they've already got Daniel Jones with a big contract there. But he did make Brian Daboll look good for a few weeks and probably saved Daboll's job during that time period. And if nothing else, Aaron Judge pays for your meals, Tommy DeVito. So I am telling you, but, you know, the city of New York may embrace you, and I hope they do.
That's fair. I will say that part of why Tommy DeVito looked good is that Joe Barry needs to be fired. He almost gave up a comeback to the previously inept offense of the Carolina Panthers, where they were up 30-16, and somehow the Packers mysteriously gave up 14 points. Hey, if we can make the Panthers look like a real-life NFL offense, we can make Tommy DeVito look like it, too. And we did. So, yeah, I can't imagine that things are going to go well there, but I'm going to continue that campaign of fire Joe Barry. Anyway, let me sell what I'm going to sell, and I'm selling the Jaguars. I probably should have sold them sooner. I don't know what's going on there. I keep expecting them to be able to show up and do something, and it's just not happening. I don't know if there's more injuries to Trevor Lawrence than what we really know, but we're talking about a team that was 8-3 at the end of November and is now 8-7. Losing to Jake Browning in his first career NFL start in overtime, losing to the Browns by 4, and then just getting blasted these last two games. Losing to the Ravens in Baltimore or at home 23-7, and then losing at Tampa 30-12. We're talking about like not even seeming like they're getting anything going offensively. Doug Peterson is the play caller. I just don't think that things are going right there. They're not getting the ball moving. And I should look at their last two games and go, you're hosting the Panthers and going to Tennessee. You should be able to win those and just go win the division at 10-7. I've lost my trust. I've lost my trust in the Jaguars. I want to sell them. Like even just to talk through this, because the Colts and Texans are right there at 8-7 as well. The Colts finish with the Raiders and Texans at home. I have no idea what the Colts are going to do, because every time I think that I know what they're going to do, they don't do that. And then the Texans have the Titans and the Colts for the final two games. They just beat the Titans in overtime in Tennessee a couple weeks ago, so now they need to try to beat them at home and then go and beat the Colts on the road. Anything can happen. Basically, if you said, Caleb, tell me what's going to happen, I think the clearest path is the Jaguars win the division, and I don't trust them to do it. So I'm not taking the Jaguars. I'm selling them. Whoever wins this division should lose to the Browns, Bills, whoever gets the 5 seed in that conference, because it's ugly. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Derek, am I right or wrong on the Jags? What are you thinking here?
Okay, so this is one of those teams that's going to take 5 years to really get better. I like Doug Peterson. I like what he does. I like Trevor Lawrence. You know, he was the second coming of Peyton Manning when he came out of high school, went to Clemson, you know, like number one overall pick, all that cool stuff. That being said, you're in a really, really bad division. Like, the Texans weren't trying to win anything. The Colts have a brand new head coach. They lost their starting quarterback. So, like, you should be dominating the division. You should be, you know, an 11-win team. You should be doing something that is special. And yet I think you're going to limp into the playoffs. So I'm not going to sell my Jaguar stock because I don't own any already.
That's fair. Well, let's jump into our game of the week, because we're talking NFC South, because the Bucks have a chance to clinch the division. And we all know that one of the things Derek likes around the holiday is a good baker. And they definitely have one of those down in Tampa Bay right now. Derek, what is your matchup to watch in the Saints at the Buccaneers?
Okay, so yeah, you are correct. I love a good baker. And Baker Mayfield is the starting quarterback for the Buccaneers. You know, there is just something special about someone coming in and blowing away all kinds of expectations for what they do. Baker is having, you know, a 26-8 season. So, 3,600 yards. I can talk. I promise. 3,600 yards season. You know, the Bucks are, you know, leading the division right now. But the Saints have to have this game in order to stay right there with them. And so for me, it's Baker Mayfield versus the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu. Tyrann's been around a few different teams, and everywhere he's gone, he has made the team better. This secondary really has to play lights out, or the ball's going to go downfield, and the score's going to be real quick. The Buccaneers are going to get all over them, and I don't think that the Saints have the ability to, like, climb back from a 14-point deficit with the offensive staff that they have. So for me, I'm wanting to see if Baker Mayfield continues his path to winning this division, and on the other side, if this secondary led by Mathieu can shut him down a little bit.
Absolutely. I think that'll be an interesting one. We all know the Honey Badger don't play, and I mean, I don't think I said this before, but not only do the Bucks win the NFC South if they win, but the Saints are eliminated from the playoffs if they lose. So Saints are playing for their life. Buccaneers are playing to clinch. You can't get much more of an exciting game this week, but I'm going to go ahead and stick with the big boys. I'm going with Tristan Wirfs against Cam Jordan on that offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Wirfs has had a really solid year, kind of bounced back from some injuries last year, really been strong and been able to go out there. And meanwhile, I've always been a big Cam Jordan guy. I feel like he has just brought it year after year after year in the league. And I don't think it's been his year. But usually this type of rivalry game is one where he comes out and puts a mark on it. I'm going to tell you this, Derek, and I think you're going to be shocked. Cam Jordan only has 2 sacks this year.
Wow.
Like, we're talking about perennial Pro Bowler, frequently All-Pro, but he's 34 and he's starting to slip. Can the wily old veteran get past the young upstart offensive tackle and go out there and make an impact? Because let's face it, if he doesn't, this may be, it's weird. I don't know that it's going to be, that there's that many more meaningful games for Cam Jordan in a Saints uniform if he can't show up. And like I said, if they lose, they lose this year. Cam Jordan does have a lot of dead cap, so they can't really move on from him for a couple of years. But it's just, it's also one of those things where the Saints have a horrible salary cap because of their lack of management of it for a long time. And I think we're going to see that start to hurt them this coming off season again.
Good point. That's a really good point. I hadn't thought of it before. Let's hope that that gets cleared up.
We'll see yeah. What happens. Derek, let's give some high fives and handshakes, and let's zoom over to our Brody bets. Let's get to those today.
Let's get over to Brody bets. So last week, I didn't have a great season, a great week. Caleb had a little bit better week than me. I went 1-4. Caleb went 2-3. He gets a high five and the handshake this week. So just to review, I had the famous Idaho Potato Bowl last week, with Georgia State and Utah State. I had Utah State winning that one. The Fightin' Jordan Loves did not pull out for me. The Broncos lost to the Patriots. I did have the Dolphins over the Cowboys. Barely. I did get the 2-point win. I had Miami -1.5. They won by 2 over the Cowboys. The Colts lost to the Falcons, and the Kansas City Las Vegas went under, as it was a 20-14 game when I had the over. Caleb had the Utah and Northwestern game under 41.5. That game easily under with only 21 points scored. His Packers beat the Panthers, but they didn't beat them by 4.5, so did not win that one. He had the Giants versus the Eagles. The Eagles only beat them by 8, so he had the Eagles -12. Saints at the Rams, the Saints did not keep it within 4, so he did not win that one. But his second win was Commanders and Jets over 37.5. That was a 58-point game, surprisingly enough. I don't know how that happened. I didn't realize they scored 58 points all season.
All offensive thriller between the Jets and the Commanders there.
Wasn't at one point in time, like, the Jets were walking away from it, and then the Commanders came back in that game?
I believe the Jets had a 20-0 lead.
That's what I thought.
Might have also had a 27-7 lead.
Something
like that. Double check that part.
Yeah, so, you know, somehow the Commanders came back, in that game. Good on you for having that game.
Yeah, it was 27-7 at the half.
Okay, so, you know, Jets, you know, you're supposed to be a defensive team. You're supposed to win on defense, and you only won by 2. So let's fix that when A-Rod comes back next year. So let's start with this week's, and I want to jump into some college as much as I can, as we've got the bigger bowl games coming out this week. I'm going to start us off with the Tax Act Texas Bowl, Oklahoma State versus Texas A&M University, TAMU. And so I have my Oklahoma State Cowboys +2 points down in Houston, the Energy Stadium. The Aggies do not have a head coach. either one of their offensive coordinators, and most of their team has is in the transfer portal, because that's what you do. So I think Oklahoma State wins this one outright, but I have Oklahoma State and the 2 points. Caleb, tell me about any thoughts that you have on that Texas Bowl, or what about your Big Ten Bowl?
I think that Tax Act Texas Bowl should be a new tongue twister, because that just the way that those letters go together sound like they do not fit correctly. I do like where you're going from, and in general, I knew that you were going to probably go with America's Brightest Orange on the big stage. They need to get that awful Big 12 championship out of their mouth, and being able to beat a team from Texas in Texas should be able to help them do that. As far as I'm going to a bowl game that's also in Texas, but I am picking the Cotton Bowl, even though it is at AT&T Stadium, because I'm going to one of those New York Six games. Give me Ohio State minus one against Missouri. I know Missouri played hard. They played well in the SEC all year. And Schrader and what he does in the running game for Drinkwitz is huge. However, Ohio State only lost one game. They lost it to the number one team in the land. And I don't care if Kyle McCord is in the transfer portal. I'm going to go ahead and take Ohio State minus the one, because I think they are going to show up and show out and have a fantastic bowl game.
I cannot wait for next year's 12-team playoff, because I am really tired of this four-team, oh, we only lost one game, and like Georgia is not in the playoff. Ohio State isn't in the playoff. Florida State isn't in the playoff. And like all these teams, like you lose to one of the other teams that are in the playoffs. It's just not fair. I can't wait for the 12 teams to come back next or to come next year. I'm sure the 13th team is going to be upset next year, but at least we can get our one loss teams in there in our undefeated teams. Let's hope.
Let's hope.
Well, do you want to go to your Packers pick?
Yeah, let me go to the Cheeseheads, because we are playing the Vikings. We are in Minnesota. The Vikings are a 2.5-point favorite, meaning we are a road underdog in this contest. I feel like whenever we play them at Minnesota, it's always a bit of a feisty game. But I don't know that I trust this game at all. I feel like this is a little bit of the very movable object versus the turnover machine that is the Minnesota Vikings offense lately. Nick Mullins can throw four interceptions. Josh Dobbs can throw four interceptions. Everyone can throw four interceptions. I just don't know what to think. I'm going to go ahead and go with the over in this one. I think it's over 45.5, because I don't know if I can sit here and say, oh, this team wins, or this team wins by that much. Because clearly I tried to take the Packers last week. They were up 16 in the second half and then decided that they didn't need to be up 16 anymore and had to hit a game-winning field goal. That's not a good way to play football. And so I'm going to go ahead and just take the over, because I think that there will be points scored, and I think that we're potentially talking about something like let's say a 30-28 game, kind of like that Commanders-Jets game. I think it's going to be a high-scoring one.
So we have 2 weeks left in the season before the playoffs. How do you feel about your new quarterback? Like, do you think he's the answer? Do you think he's the second coming of Brett Favre? Where are you feeling right now?
I think that Jordan Love has shown that he does really well with a lot of the tools that are around him. I want to continue to see how he progresses, because I don't think I would sit here and say, oh, he's the best, but I think that he is solid. And I think especially when we see a lot of the chaos that's going on in the NFL at quarterback this year, I think we're probably to the point where we're potentially going to see, I think, 65 to 70 quarterbacks start games this year because of injuries and backups and whatnot. Jordan Love is great. I'm very happy with him.
Yeah, great, great insight there. I, you know, good on you for sticking with Jordan Love as the owner. I mean, I think some people would have, kicked the baby out with the bathwater. And, you know, I think there is someone to be fired up there in Packerland. And, you know, we'll talk about that another day.
I mean, I think that we could, just say that we need to get rid of Joe Barry. That's fine.
There you go. Fire Joe Barry. So let's go over to my Broncos. They are at home this week versus the LA Chargers. The Broncos are a 5.5-point favorite, and the over-under is 38.5. I think the Broncos have said, we're done, and we're not, you know, we don't really have a shot of the playoffs, so let's see what we can do. I don't think they're going to score a bunch of points. I don't know if Russell Wilson and Sean Payton are happy together, but I'm taking the under at 38.5, as I don't think the Chargers are going to score many points, because that defense is still pretty good, and I don't trust the 5.5 with the to beat the team by 5.5. So I'm taking the under 38.5. So for my favorite this week, I'm jumping to the Orange Bowl. We have Georgia versus Florida State. This is who should have been in the playoff game. We have Georgia -16.5 versus Florida. I mean, both of these teams are right there on the cusp of, like, easy travel. It's like a whole bunch of Oklahomans going to the Cotton Bowl. It's not that far away. For Georgia fans, it's not that far away. For Florida fans, Florida State fans, I mean. But I'm taking Georgia. They were the number one team in the nation for almost the entire year. And there's a reason for that. I think that if you lose to Alabama by 3, that game was just not great for the Bulldogs. So I think that Georgia goes in there and romps all over Florida State. The starting quarterback for a good portion of the year is in the transfer portal for Florida State. So I think Georgia shows up to this game and plays. And no matter who wins the national championship game, if Georgia beats up Florida State, I think they should be voted the national champion. Just my personal opinion. What about your favorite, Caleb? Where are you at?
I'm going with the Joe Flacco revenge game, as I'm going to take the Cleveland Browns -7 on Thursday Night Football against the New York Football Jets. The Jets are bad. The Browns keep finding ways to win. I'm just going to say, why don't I at least try taking the Browns? I haven't done it a lot. Short week. They're at home. Miles Garrett gets to face that horrible offensive line. I'm taking the Browns.
Why couldn't Joe Flacco play this good when he was a Bronco? It's just not fair. Like, does he not give good effort? Like, they're winning a bunch of games. Why can't he? We couldn't have done this when he was a Bronco. Okay, I'm tired of crying. Let's move on. So as Caleb said, I'm taking a bunch of college games for my picks. My underdog this week, I'm going to the Rose Bowl. So I am going in all SEC picks this week. The Rose Bowl, I have Bama +2 versus those pesky Wolverines. You know, this could be Mr. Harbaugh's last game on the sidelines, and I think that he is getting his PowerPoint presentation ready to go talk to some NFL teams, so he's not going to have his boys ready to go. And Bama, when you beat the number one team in the nation, I'm going to give it to you. I trust Nick Saban, so I have Bama plus the points versus Michigan. Caleb, where are you going for your underdog?
My underdog this week, I am going to Arrowhead Stadium. And I don't know if you can call it Browning Head. I don't know if you can call it Mixon Head or maybe Higgins Head. Higgins Head sounds fun. But I'm going to take the Bengals +8 at the Chiefs. Do I think the Chiefs could win this? Sure. But they're coming off of a short week with them playing on Christmas Day. The Bengals just got embarrassed a little bit on a Saturday game, so the Bengals get two full extra days of rest compared to the Chiefs in this contest. I think they're going to find a way to look better on offense and make their defense look a little bit more disciplined. I'm going to go ahead and just give them a chance. I'm giving the Bengals plus +8 as this is probably a far more defensive contest than any of us were truly expecting when we circled this one on the calendar, probably before the season started. Bengals at Chiefs. Yeah, that game's huge for the playoffs. Oh, wait. It's huge for the Chiefs to potentially win the division and the Bengals to potentially make a wild card? Question mark. But yeah, Bengals plus +8.
Man, that is, that's a spicy meatball. I don't know if the Chiefs backing their way into the playoffs is going to be fun, but, you know, here we are. So my wild card, and I'm not going to go real spicy on this one. I'm going to go as bland as a saltine cracker, as I'm going the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. And this is the Iowa-Tennessee game. And, you know, as much as I love the Volunteers and I love to volunteer about how much I enjoy talking about them, I think that Iowa defense is just top-notch. And so I don't think Tennessee can score 36.5 points on Iowa. And I know Iowa can't score that many points. They may get a punt return for a touchdown or something like that. So I'm going under 36.5.
Nice. Anytime you can take the Iowa under, you know that we are a big proponent of that here on the pod. I'm going under as well in my wild card, but I'm going to, alas, a Saturday night game in the NFL because they're still doing them. And so I'm still at least paying attention. This one is for the NFC, as the Lions and the Cowboys are going to be going head-to-head. I think that, in general, these two teams are going to play each other a bit more feisty than a lot of people would imagine. They put the over-under on this game all the way up at 53.5. The Cowboys and Dolphins just played and scored 42 points. I don't think that we're going to sit here and say the Lions are a more electric offense than the Dolphins. So I'm going under. I think that they're going to be a little bit of cat and mouse. I think CeeDee Lamb is going to have a good game because the Lions secondary is not that strong. But I also think that they're going to find ways to make the Cowboys regret not having as much of a strong running game as they wanted to most of this year. So give me the Lions, Cowboys under that high 53.5.
Does the Cowboys defense get into form? That's a good question. I think the under is probably a good pick there.
I mean, I like it. It's a lot of fun, and we always like to have a lot of fun here on Brody Sports Talk. If you think that you've enjoyed this episode, feel free to give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts, and make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. That's it for the Brody Bets. That's it for this episode. So we hope you had a great time. On behalf of my co-host, and you know how much Captain Orange loves it over there, I do want to thank you for listening, and y'all have a great day. And until we catch you, see you in 2024. Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you then. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Brody. Brody, 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 Sports Talk. Brody, 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 Sports Talk. Brody, 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 Sports Talk. Brody Sports Talk.
What's up, Brody?